This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire for Thursday, January 6th. And we had a night in the NBA. I'm trying to get excited, folks. I'm trying really hard to get pumped up about the NBA. And we'll get to Kyrie Irving's return to the court. I know some people are stoked. Other people are rolling their eyes. We had an Antonio Brown development late last night. And probably bigger than both of those is today's guest. I know you guys are getting excited to handicap and gamble on the NFL playoffs. Week 18, really tough sell. Only like three or four games matter. And I thought we'd bring in a guest who could make sense of what the hell to expect in the playoffs. You know him, Aaron Schatz, runs Football Outsiders, super smart guy, very into the numbers. I know some of you are going to be like, oh, the numbers, I don't want to hear it. I want to hear takes. We do both. Takes and gambling. And numbers matter. If you're not playing the numbers, you're really hurting this year. Because what Schatz is about to say, and folks, I'm not trying to make any of his opinions super incendiary, but he's saying, without question, the Tennessee Titans, assuming they get the one seed, and they're likely to, they're going to be the worst number one seed ever, according to the DVOA numbers from Football Outsiders. Worst number one seed ever. Ever. And they get a bye week. Now, a lot of it has to do with the health. Remember A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Derrick Henry, that stuff matters. So I know Titans fans are going to be pissed, and I get it. I understand it. We also try to make sense of the Bengals. There's some interesting noise in their incredible numbers. I try to sell Aaron on the Rams. He is buying the Cowboys. Yes, Dallas Cowboys fans get excited. So you guys are going to like that. But first, I thought we'd open with Kyrie Irving, just briefly. And, you know, it's funny. So I turn on the game. I start watching Kyrie go against the Pacers. And I'm like, wait a minute. Who are these Pacers guards? You know, I'm a fan a little bit of the Pacers. My old neighbor is like a big-time Pacers fan. So I occasionally check out what's going on with Indy. I've always been a Sabonis guy, but dating back to his Gonzaga days. He had a trip dub. I think Miles Turner's a little overrated. Some like Warriors fans are like, we need Miles Turner to protect the rim. Anyways, I looked at the Pacers starting backcourt. Before I get to Kyrie Irving, it is two rookies. One, Dwayne Washington from Ohio State. Ohio State Buckeyes fans will remember how bad he was in their NCAA tournament loss. He was awful. That was the last time we saw Dwayne Washington. He's now starting for the Indiana Pacers. He was not drafted. His backcourt mate in Indy. Again, this is going against James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and somebody named David Duke Jr. from Providence, a rookie. Again, COVID's still hitting the NBA. That's why I haven't gambled on it in like 3 weeks. Anyways, the Pacers starting backcourt is rookie Dwayne Washington out of Ohio State and a guy named Kiefer Sykes, a rookie from Green Bay, who is 28 years old. He's a 28-year-old rookie. I'm going to let that sink in, and then I will tell you guys the fascinating news that Kyrie Irving had 22 points in his return. The Nets storm back from a double-digit deficit, dominate the fourth quarter, and win in Indy. I mean, like, what else is there to say? I know, I get it. You know, the hoop heads are stoked. Kyrie back! Kyrie's back! Oh, get excited! Like, okay, I get it. He's dynamic. He's fun to watch. He's got one of the best handles in the league. Again, some of the off-court stuff has dampened, if you listen to yesterday's pod, has dampened my enthusiasm toward Kyrie. The guy's 29. He's going to be turning 30 here in a little bit. I still have yet to see him win without LeBron. We'll see. If he don't win this year with the Nets, it's a problem. I saw a stat that since he signed with Brooklyn, I guess he's been the team's played like 195 games, and he's played less than half of those because of the injuries. Yeah, it stinks because, you know, it's robbing the NBA of a big-time talent. But you know, I follow some NBA accounts on Instagram, and I see these guys like trying to hype up, is Kyrie the third best point guard in NBA history? And I'm just like, what on earth is this? Like, what, maybe the third best in the history of the Cavs? I don't know, like Mark Price? I'm just joking around. Anyways, Kyrie Irving's back. Congratulations to Kyrie and all the Nets fans out there, all those long-suffering Nets fans, you know. You got Kyrie back. Great. Elsewhere in sports, Antonio Brown's lawyer dropped a bit of a bombshell on Wednesday night. Lengthy, of course, you know how it's done on social media. They put it in the notes section and basically send it out. So Antonio Brown's lawyer is making the claim that Antonio Brown is committed and he was all in, and then all of a sudden he was injured on the sideline. And despite the pain, let me just make sure I read this correctly. I suited up. The staff injected me with what I now know was a powerful and sometimes dangerous painkiller the NFLPA has warned against using. I mean, really, is this what you want to do, Antonio Brown? A dangerous painkiller. I'm sure you were just saying, no, I don't want that. Anyways, so Antonio Brown says his ankle's in extreme pain. He took a seat on the sideline. His coach says, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I told him, it's my ankle. But he knew that it was well documented. We had discussed it. Then he ordered me to get on the field. I said, coach, I can't. He didn't call for medical attention. Instead, he shouted at me, you're done, while he ran his finger across his throat. Bruce Arians doing the throat slit to Antonio Brown while the Bucs are losing? Surely there's got to be video of the throat slit. Coach was telling me if I don't play hurt, I was done with the Bucs. I didn't quit. I was cut. I didn't walk away from my brothers. I was thrown out. Okay? So, I'm sure some of you guys are laughing. Trust me. When I read this, I was like, oh my gosh, give me a break. Before I make my statement, I want to remind you guys, remember his ending with the Raiders. Okay? Remember his ending with the Patriots. Remember his ending with Mike Tomlin. Okay? Scorpion and the Frog, guys. Longtime listeners of my radio show and the podcast know the Scorpion and the Frog. Do I need to retell it? Should I? So the scorpion's trying to cross the river, can't get across. And he sees a frog. He says, hey, man, can I get a ride across the river? And the frog's like, hell no. You're going to sting me and I'll die. Scorpion's like, why would I do that? If I sting you, we'll both sink and die. And the frog's like, oh, well, all right, fine. So frog gives the scorpion a ride across the river. Halfway through, bink, scorpion stings him. Frog's like, ah, what the hell are you doing, dude? Why'd you do that? I'm a scorpion. This is what I do. And they both go down and die. Antonio Brown is a scorpion. Are we surprised? This is what he does. Are we really to believe that Antonio Brown was told, you're done, throat slit, get out, you don't want to go on the field, fine. And so Antonio Brown, who we see in the videos arguing with Mike Evans, I can't calm down, and then like a petulant child takes off his stuff, throws it to the fans, and then walks away like celebrating? His ankle looked fine as he was skipping through the end zone. Like, again, this is not like a 23-year-old dude who is just young and dumb and an idiot. And I was young and dumb and stupid at 23. Trust me. My friends who are listening know this. We were all young and dumb and stupid. Anybody who says they were, a beacon of light and really smart and made only great decisions at 23, you're lying. Like, I don't know, you're lying too. But at 23, everybody did dumb things. I did dumb things until I was like 27, maybe 28. Then I met the wifey, cleaned up my act. I knew I had to kind of tighten up the ship. Anyways, Antonio Brown's a grown-ass man. And his reaction to you're done, instead of like calling the trainer or anything, is, let me just disrobe on the sideline and peace out and then celebrate by pointing to the fans. He did not look pissed. And I know like that's what he's doing. He's putting a brave face on it and flexing and gesturing like, okay. There was a great Seinfeld clip that I think it was my brother sent it to me, or maybe a buddy of mine who moved to South Carolina, sent it to me of they were basically saying, here's Antonio Brown talking to his agent, and it was Jerry Seinfeld and George Costanza going over the time where George quit. I think it was the time George quit in the office. He's like, what do I do? And Jerry's like, you know what? Why don't you just go back like it never happened? Just show up. I'm an emotional guy. And, you know, it's really funny. It's like 40 seconds, and it's a classic Seinfeld thing. And I thought about it, and I was like, could Antonio Brown just show up like, hey, sorry, you know, whatever. I mean, he's not going to apologize. We know that. But he just act like nothing happened. Just being like, oh, well, you know. Anyways, so what do we got today? You know, just show up and brush it off. And like, I clearly we're past the point of that. Somebody told me something interesting. He's connected to a team in the NFC. He said, the reason the Bucs have been reluctant to drop Brown is because Michael Gallup went down for the Cowboys. And yes, they have Cedric Wilson. But would you be shocked if Dallas, Jerry Jones, loves big names, loves flashy objects. If Jerry Jones went out and said, okay, Antonio Brown's on the market, I'll take him. I personally think there's no shot in hell, none, that Jerry Jones would do that. But what about the Kansas City Chiefs? Andy Reid loves a good reclamation project. Remember, they went out and got Josh Gordon. I don't even know if he's still on the team. I mean, I think he had a touchdown a few weeks ago. I haven't seen anything since. No shot Bill Belichick's doing, and I can't see the Buffalo Bills. Remember when they tried to sign him and he was like, hell no, I'm not going to Buffalo. Remember that? Bengals don't need him. I guess the Titans could, but he seems a little bit too much for the Tennessee locker room. Vrabel, I don't think he's putting up with that headache. No shot a rookie could coach of the Eagles has taken him. I can't see the Packers doing it. No, I mean, why do you mess with a good thing? Rams did lose Robert Woods, but they got Odell. You can't have Odell and Antonio Brown. No way. No shot of that. So, I mean, personally, I don't think anyone touches him. Plus, he claims he's injured. So, anyways, we've gone on long enough. Antonio Brown, little Kyrie Irving, and now let's get to our guest, Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome in to Straight Fire. He's a regular at this point. We've had him on multiple times. Every time he's bringing the noise and the funk. Right now, Tennessee Titans fans can't stand him. Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm good. New year, same stuff, man.
Yes, indeed. Yes, Tennessee Titans fans. I see them on social media just attacking you. And listen, we'll get to the NFL playoffs and all that fun stuff. But I just want to ask, you know, this is something I tried to talk about the last couple weeks. This is a long season, right? We're at week 18. A couple teams still can get in the playoffs. And I'm just curious, how do you weigh early season priors? Does September matter as much as, say, what's happened lately? Because you've got the Cincinnati Bengals, Johnny come lately, two impressive wins, Joe Burrow off the charts, and all of a sudden everybody, oh, Bengals, could they win it? And meanwhile, the Rams and Matt Stafford, you know, Stafford's struggling, but they were preseason odds, like we're up there to win the Super Bowl. I still kind of like them, Aaron. How do you weigh early season versus late season as we head to the playoffs?
Well, we do have, you know, the DVOA metric that we use at Football Outsiders. I do have a version called weighted DVOA that what it does is that as you go a certain number of weeks into the past, it drops the weight of games until by the time you get to early September, the games don't count anymore. And that version is a little bit more predictive, just a little bit, only a slight amount more predictive than the total season rating. So I do tend to look at teams through both the vision, you know, both the vision of the weighted DVOA and the vision of the full season DVOA. But there's no question that, like, for example, the Green Bay Packers had that huge loss to the Saints in week one. It really doesn't look like that matters at all anymore because they haven't played like that since then. They've had every single game since then has been a good game by our numbers, even the games they lost.
So essentially, everybody's welcome to a clunker, right? Green Bay Packers had theirs early, got it out of the way. And then, you know, other than the Jordan Love game against the Chiefs, you know, they've pretty much been very, very good. Even that loss, you're right, to the Vikings. So are they still, in all your metrics, the universal favorites to win the Super Bowl?
They're the favorites to win the Super Bowl because of the fact that they're the number one seed and they're good. They're not our number one team, despite the fact that they have all those wins. But they are currently fourth in the weighted rating. And when you add that to the fact that they're the number one seed, that makes them the Super Bowl favorite.
Got it. So right now your number one team in DVOA, I believe, is the Dallas Cowboys?
For the full season, it's the Cowboys.
Okay. So and now a lot. Well, hold on.
Weighted rating, it's Patriots.
Oh, God. I can't go there. I know you're a New England guy, but I need to drill down on the Cowboys for a second. So I really like them a lot. And then, you know, they look pretty ordinary against Arizona. And that's when you have this random loss where you're like losing as 6-point home favorites, you start looking, you're like, wait a second, when was the last time they beat a good team? And then you look at the NFC East and it's like not very good. And all of a sudden it's, oh, Dallas is crushing bad teams. And oh my goodness, they really haven't beaten anybody good in a while. How do you explain that versus what your numbers tell you?
Here's the thing. Historically, the best indicator of a championship team is that they destroy bad opponents.
Okay.
That is a better indicator of a championship team than having a close win against a good opponent. I think that the question of whether you've beaten good teams is a little overrated. Obviously, the best win is when you have a big win against a good opponent.
For instance, right? the Colts crushing the Bills.
Yes.
Okay.
Or the Patriots, for that matter. Both of those, right?
Come on, really good result.
Those are okay. Really good results.
Okay.
But the fact is, big dominant wins over a team like Washington are a really good indicator of a championship team. So I happen to think that Dallas is a little bit undervalued.
But Aaron, let me ask, like in the playoffs, you're only playing good teams. There's not going to be any below 500 teams in the playoffs. So what does it matter if you kill bad teams, if there's no bad teams in the postseason?
Because killing bad teams is a indicator of that in the future, you will play well against good teams. There isn't really this dichotomy for the most part between how you play against good teams and how you play against bad teams. In general, every team in the NFL is better against bad teams than they are against good teams. Yes. Like that's kind of how it works. And so it's not like having those close wins against good teams, like, you know, is an indicator that you're going to be really good in the future. It's usually you'd rather beat good teams than lose to them. But the fact is, it's those big dominating wins over bad teams are indicators that you will play better in the future.
Okay. So I'm going to look at the Buffalo Bills, who I believe are every game they've won is by double digits, but they got destroyed by the Colts. And then in the other five games, all close games, one score games, they're 0-5. What on earth are we to make of the Buffalo Bills? I mean, they kill the bad teams, and then they basically have really struggled against everyone else.
And they haven't. See, the thing is that they haven't killed the bad teams, right? That Jacksonville 9-7 game.
Oh, okay. Removing
really
Jacksonville. Yes,
out.
Yes, yes.
It really stands out. Yeah.
Well, all right. Fine. That stands out. But, I mean, they beat Washington by 20, Houston by 40,
yep.
Miami by 15.
Very inconsistent this year. But when Jets, you put the whole resume together, they're one of the top teams in the league. When you put the whole resume together, they're the top team in the AFC. No question about it.
No question?
I think at this point, they're the top team in the AFC if you put the whole resume together from this year. If you consider like, well, we know that Mahomes has been an MVP in the past and like, you know, all this expectation of what Kansas City's potential is.
Right.
Then I understand why Kansas City is favored in Vegas. But if you just look at the resume of what teams did in 2021, Buffalo is the top team in the AFC.
And is there a singular number, be it, margin of victory, point differential, net yards per play? Any of those jump out? Because I mentioned net yards per play because I want to get to that. They are number one in the league in net yards per play.
Yeah. Look, you don't need my fancy stats. If you want to look at my fancy stats for the season, right, not weighted to recent games, but for the season, Buffalo is the top team in the AFC. But let's look just at the not fancy stat of point differential, which is usually a very strong indicator of how good teams are. Buffalo is the number one team in the league in point differential. Period.
And so, you know, I know a lot of people are going to start gambling here right after week 18. Who can I bet on to make a Super Bowl run? You know, what wild card team, blah, blah, blah. And is there a number for you that stands out above all, Aaron, be it point differential, net yards per play, DVOA, weighted DVOA. Is there one that you personally value a little more?
I mean, I would look at DVOA and weighted DVOA, and that's, you know, that's why I feel like Dallas, if you look at the odds, I feel like Dallas is, that's the team where there's value that's still a realistic chance. You know, I could talk about the value of the San Francisco 49ers, but that's, a super long shot, you know, hey, there's a little bit of value in a super long shot, right? But I mean, of teams like that are going to, you know, top four seeds, right? Like, I feel like that's where the value, because they're number one in our ratings for the whole year and number two in the weighted ratings that give to recent games.
And what I like about weighted is that there is the balance of recent games matter more. I need to ask about the Rams, who play in my backyard. Matt Stafford's been pretty bad lately, but they've won in spite of him. Weighted DVOA looks like the Rams are eighth. They are second in net yards per play, right behind the Bills. I have this sneaky feeling that they're going to be able to put it together in the postseason. What do you make of this them winning in spite of Stafford really vomiting all over himself?
Yeah, I think that, you know, all of the belief early in the season that Stafford was this colossal step forward over Jared Goff. We said in the preseason, we didn't think the difference between them was quite as big as people thought it was. And I think people have come around, have kind of come back around to that idea, only they've come back around to that idea in the negative way. Instead of, well, maybe Goff's not as bad as we think, it's turned into, oh, maybe Stafford's not as good as we think. But the fact is, this is still a very well-rounded team. So the thing about the Rams is that they do everything well. Like, yes, sometimes Stafford vomits all over himself, but for the most part, that's a strong passing attack, strong rushing attack, strong pass defense, strong run defense, top 10 special teams. So if one element of their game falters, the other four elements are there to pick it up. So that, I think, is a positive for the Rams.
You mentioned special teams. Just to point out to everybody, Green Bay, I think it's been most of the season, dead last Football Outsiders special teams. Their kicker stinks. He misses a ton. I think they've given up two or three returns for touchdowns. All around, their special teams are awful. How much do you weigh that in, like, hey, you know, Green Bay, they're all going to be playing all their games at home in the crappy weather, but I don't know, special teams, big for you?
It's a little bit. It's a little bit. So the generic answer that I give is, in general, the quality of a football team is four parts offense, three parts defense, and one part special teams. But like the ratings for special teams on my site, on footballoutsiders.com, they're, you know, calculated to fit in with the ratings for offense and defense, right? So Green Bay is plus 23 on offense and minus 5 on special teams. So the what they lose from their special teams is less than a quarter of what they gain from their offense, right? Like, they're much better on offense than they are bad on special teams.
Yeah, and special teams, you know, it matters, but obviously offense significantly more. Now, you guys have Tampa Bay number one in offense. And again, that's for the entire season. Antonio Brown played a lot this year. Godwin played a lot this year. They're both out. People seem down on Tampa right now. The defense is kind of beat up. They get a little lucky there to beat the Jets after the Jets made a horrible fourth down call. Play call, I should say. I don't know. How are you to handicap the Bucs? We know what they did last year going on the road for three straight, but doing that again seems like a bit of a stretch, right?
Well, now you get into one of the more difficult things about doing this, is that I can produce all the numbers in the world, but then you have to sort of mentally adjust them for the injury situation for each team. And you're absolutely right about Tampa Bay, which is, I mean, they should get defensive players back. Levante David should be back for the playoffs. The games they had to play earlier in the year when they were down to like cornerbacks they were grabbing off the street, like most of the cornerbacks are back by now. But there's no question that the wide receiver core, Godwin and Brown, are big guys to miss. They've been without Brown for most of the year, but most of that time they had Godwin. Like, they've never been without both Godwin and Brown. So I do think you have to take a little bit off of their rating. And, you know, it's hard. They're not going to have to win three games on the road.
Not road, yeah.
First game at home. But, yeah, it's hard to – there's a reason why the number one seeds are get a little boost. I mean, that extra week of rest is good, and then not having to play a team in the first round. Because no matter how good a team you are, there is a chance you will lose in the first round unless you don't play.
I didn't even mention Fournette, of course, who was huge in the playoffs last year. This year, he's been I think he's on IR right now. I think he's expected to come off, right?
He'll be back for the playoffs, too. I think he's supposed to come back for the playoffs, too. But again, I mean, if you think about player value by position, you know, I'm an analytics guy who subscribes to not running backs don't matter, but running backs don't matter as much as other positions.
Right,
so I would
right.
be much more worried about the loss of Godwin and Brown.
Yes.
Than I would about the loss of Fournette.
I need to ask you about your Patriots. It's funny. Everybody seemed to, they were hot, talk of the town. And then they lose to the Bills at home in a game Josh Allen probably had his best game of the season. And it, you know, nobody's really talking about the Patriots. Aaron, I think we both know that no rookie quarterback has ever really had a massive postseason run. Mac Jones going to be the first?
I mean, it's a possibility, certainly. I think that there's a reasonable argument that our system is giving too much weight to blowouts. Like, the fact is, blowouts are pretty predictive. Like, blowouts are pretty predictive of being a good team. But we may be giving a little too much weight because some teams shut it off late in blowouts, like the Chiefs. The Patriots don't.
No.
Like, they brought it, like, they bring in Brian Hoyer, and Hoyer goes and throws for a touchdown. So, like, that's counting in our numbers. And maybe that's counting a little too much. Or the interceptions that the backup quarterbacks from the Atlanta Falcons threw to them. Maybe counting a little too much. So, I mean, if you ask me subjectively, do I think the Patriots are the best team right now? I mean, my numbers say that right now, because of how well they've played over the last 8 to 10 weeks, they're the best team. Do I really think that? No. Mm. Do I think they're a little underrated by the public? A little underrated by the public. But there's no question Mac Jones has specific weaknesses, certain throws that either he can't make or they don't trust him to make. It's going to make it tough for them to win the three games that it takes to get to the Super Bowl. But I would absolutely favor them over, like, for example, I think the most likely first round opponent for them is the Bengals.
Oh, no. Zach Taylor against Belichick?
I would favor them over the Bengals.
Yeah. Well, a favor?
I would favor them over the Bengals, yes.
Now, see, that's going to be one that's going to be super tough because, you know, Aaron, you could basically say, oh, rookie quarterback starting, you got to take the other team against the spread. And it's hit ridiculous. I think 9 of the last 10 rookie quarterbacks have lost and not covered the spread. Something insane. But Bill Belichick against Zach Taylor that's such a mismatch.
I mean, you've got to think that Belichick is going to be able to scheme something up where they'll pay a lot of attention to Ja'Marr Chase. And they'll have the other guys covered because the biggest weakness of the Cincinnati Bengals is the offensive line. Mm. So the Patriots can get after that offensive line with four guys and leave the rest of the people in coverage and cover the receivers and probably double Chase. I mean, you know, Belichick's smart about this stuff. And if you look at how good teams have been over the course of the season, right? I mean, Cincinnati they're 17th in our numbers. Now, you can argue with that. Like, I did a whole article this week where I went into, like, why is it that we have Cincinnati so low? But there are other advanced metrics that have him almost as low. Like, ESPN's FPI only has Cincinnati 14th, and they have New England 3rd. So I think there's no question, like, if you're New England and you don't win the division, which, I mean, unless the Jets rise up.
No, not
going to.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Like, if you're New England and you get a wild card, who do you want to face? Buffalo, Kansas City, or Cincinnati? There's no question you want to
You want to face Cincinnati.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
So what do you think it is about the Bengals? Is it the, you know, two humongous wins over the Ravens? They double-digit wins over Pittsburgh, Detroit, but they've gotten blown out.
They slaughter teams with bad secondaries and with a lack of depth in the secondary. Chase just took over games this year, like especially the Kansas City game. Chase just took over, like, by himself. But over the course of the whole season, they're not one of the top teams in the AFC. Like, could they go on a run in the playoffs? I mean, given the
Anybody
way Burrow
can.
And Chase have played the last couple of weeks, how can you say no?
Yeah.
Are they likely to go on that run? No, they're not likely to.
Okay, so now it's time where we talk about the Tennessee Titans. I know they're one of the most boring teams in the league, but they're also, Aaron, a real tough read because of the Derrick Henry factor. You look at the point differential, they're not there. Net yards per play is bad. Like, no number that I can find points to Tennessee as a really good team or impressive. What am I missing here?
So let's start with how they've played during the regular season itself. The Titans will be the worst number one seed ever by DVOA. And we go back to 1983. Not only that.
Well, wait, hold on, hold on. Let me ask. Like the former worst number one seed, did it lose in the first round?
No, the former number one seed made it to the worst number one seeds before this actually lost the Super Bowl.
Wow. So how many of the worst, like the last three worst or something?
Like the 12 worst number one seeds, only two of them lost in the first round. That bye week is important.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But none of them were as bad during the regular season as Tennessee was. In fact, Tennessee right now would be worse than any number two seed ever.
What? Oh, man. So just no respect for this team. I mean, offensively, Tannehill has what, like 200-300-yard games
this season? They'll probably be better, because if you assume they go out and they crash Houston, right? Like they win big because they care and Houston doesn't.
Or they want revenge. Yeah, okay.
They'll no longer be the worst of the number two seeds, right? So here's the thing about Tennessee. They have had a lot of injuries, and any Tennessee fan will point this out to you, as Tennessee fans have been pointing out to me on Twitter all week long. There's no doubt they've had a ton of injuries. You know, again, as an analytics guy, I think the Henry injury is overstated. What's not overstated is the number of games they had to play without A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, and all the injuries they've also had on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and the offensive line too, right? I mean, Lawan's missing time.
They've had offensive line injuries too. Yeah, they've had injuries everywhere. Not quite as bad as Baltimore, because Baltimore kept losing guys for the season.
Yeah.
Right? Tennessee kept losing guys for like three or four games. But most of those guys are now healthy. So you do have to mentally adjust. They're not really the worst number one seed ever if you consider how they are when they're fully healthy. But mentally adjusting for that is hard. Like, let's take the defense. Like, you know, David Long missed three or four games, and Bud Dupree missed like five games, and then Christian Fulton missed like five games. But they didn't all miss the same games. There isn't like a chunk of four games that you can take out of Tennessee's rating and go, all right, we're not going to consider those because the whole defense was out. We're only going to consider these, and then this is how good Tennessee is. Plus, other teams have an argument. If you're going to do that, when you rate Tennessee, then you have to consider, what about those games where like Tampa Bay was just taking quarterbacks off the street and putting them in the lineup, like Richard Sherman and Pierre Desir, right? Yeah. Like Tampa Bay, then you need to adjust where Tampa, you know, every team has injuries. Some teams have been really, really healthy. The Patriots are a good example. The Patriots have been possibly the healthiest team in the league this year. But most teams, especially because of COVID, they've got guys going in and out of the lineup all the time. So trying to adjust what Tennessee is for the games where they were missing guys is tough. On offense, there's no question. If you only look at games where Henry, Jones, and Brown all play, they're a much better offense.
Interesting.
But those games were all 2 months ago.
Yeah, well, Henry's supposedly coming back. But I do want to ask, like, last year they had Henry, Brown, no Julio Jones, and they went to the playoffs, you know, and everybody was like, oh, they can make a run, and they lost in the first round to Baltimore in a game where their offense could just do nothing. It looked like they were physically tired. I mean, I know there's no way to put a number on this, but do you think Henry missing, what, 2 months is in a way a blessing because he's going to come in super fresh? Because he was running slow. He didn't have a carry of 10 yards in that playoff game last year.
I have no idea, because I can't tell you that I'm an expert on what the recovery process from a broken foot is. Like, I don't know. What, does he come back and he's like super comfortable running on it, or he feel a little weird about running on it because he hasn't been running on it for 2 months? Like, I don't know. That is where, like, let's be honest, that extra week of practice where they don't have to play a game is so useful for them because of the Henry and Jones injuries, and getting those guys back fully healthy, and not just fully healthy, but fully like confident in their bodies is really huge for them.
All right, so Tennessee, what about Indy? What are we supposed to make of this whole Jonathan Taylor? I don't know. I'm of the belief that Carson Wentz is just so bad, he's more likely to lose you a playoff game than win one. But again, there's no numbers on that. That's just the eyeball test of Carson Wentz this year. What do the numbers say about the Colts?
Yeah, because if you look at the numbers, the Colts passing game has been average. Like, it has not been terrible. It's been average. I think the Colts are an interesting team. They're good in every way other than the passing game.
Yeah.
And the passing game is average. And they're dangerous. And, you know, we saw them destroy Buffalo and we saw them destroy New England. And like I said, those are two really good teams that they beat. But at the same time, there's always that feeling like Wentz is going to do something really stupid.
Yeah, like even the Tampa game.
He hasn't as much as you think he has.
Well, that's because Reich really has him on a short leash. Would you agree?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he just, he's like, you could see he does not want him to screw up. So with leads, they all of a sudden become susceptible because you know he's not going to have Wentz throwing.
Yeah, and I think the Patriots have a little bit of that going on too.
Because
of Mac Jones, a rookie, and they don't want, you know, they want to keep him a little bit contained. Frankly, the 49ers have a little bit of that going on too when Garoppolo starts.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Colts are dangerous. They're very good in our numbers, but it is tough. The fact is that the passing game is the most consistent part of football, and it is where they are the worst.
All right. So, Aaron, I guess if people are looking, everybody's going to come out and pick the Packers, right? But that's very chalky. I don't know. It sounds like you, and again, I'm not, you know, reading into what you're saying. I'm curious as to just your official thought. It sounds like you kind of like Buffalo in the AFC and maybe Dallas in the NFC.
I mean, Buffalo or Kansas City.
Buffalo, yeah.
I mean, I will say, like, before the season, my Super Bowl pick was Kansas City and Dallas.
Wow. You had Dallas before the season.
So I still feel pretty good about that.
Yeah.
We have Dallas in our playoff odds second behind Green Bay. So Green Bay is the proper, I mean, if you want to be most accurate, Green Bay is the proper pick.
Yeah.
To get out of the NFC
the
because
safest.
Of the importance of that number one seed. And the fact is in the weighted ratings, the Chiefs are a little higher than the Bills now. But I think, I mean,
well, the Chiefs have, they had won seven in a row, right?
Chiefs Bills would be an excellent AFC championship game.
I do
not only the Chiefs had run seven in a row, but by our numbers, the Chiefs outplayed the Bengals.
Yes. And I know I'm not going to get into the referees and, you know, some of the stuff that happened in that one. Just the last thing on the Dallas Cowboys. Again, I know you're all numbers based, but when you watch Dak for the last month, what do you think's happened? You know, remove that Washington game. The offense just hasn't been sharp. Is there anything you can put your finger on as to what they are not doing? Or is this Kellen Moore saying, hey, you know what? Our defense is playing well. Let's rein in Dak a little bit, have him play safer, and let's let our defense carry us. Because the defense has been pretty tremendous.
I don't think they're playing safer. I think it's a slump. I don't think that they're keeping him contained. But when I look at it, I think of it as similar to Mahomes at midseason, not on the same level. But we know that Dak Prescott is one of the five or six best quarterbacks in the game. Again, I'm not saying he's at the level of Mahomes, but it's the same thing where when Mahomes slumped in the middle of the season, we all kind of sat there and went, all right, he's going to break out of this, right? Like he's Mahomes. Like we have a history of how good he is. He's going to break out of this. And he did. Well, Dak Prescott, we have a history of how good he is, and how good he is historically is better than what he's been the last 3 or 4 weeks. I just get this feeling like he's going to break. I'd rather bet on the longer term with Dak than just the short term with Dak. So I feel like this is a slump, but there's a good chance he breaks out of the slump.
I saw some videos people were cutting up online of the Arizona Cardinals were really tricking Dak by putting like five linebackers and six defensive backs. They were just stacking the field with quickness. And then at the last, they were stacking the line of scrimmage as well. At the last minute, they'd have linebackers drop back and Dak was not really reading it quick enough. I don't know. That Arizona game was a little troubling, but again, maybe you want to just say, yeah, he didn't have a good game.
Yeah. Plus he now can study that. I mean, the thing about strategies that beat someone like that is that once you've beaten someone like that, they can study it and be prepared for it next time. So if he plays, I'm trying to think like what team that he would play other than Arizona that has sort of the same speed on the second and third level to, I don't think there is another team in the NFC that has that speed at the second and third level to quite do that, what Arizona
did. Well, we didn't talk about the Eagles. I don't know about that. I think their linebackers are pretty putrid, but yeah, their secondary is okay,
Rams,
right?
Linebackers aren't very good, and Tampa Bay, you know, the secondary is, you know, they get Levante David back. They might have, I mean, you know, Devon White and Levante David is a nice combination linebacker.
Yeah, Tampa doesn't seem like a great matchup because Dallas, the reason I like them is because, you know, yes, they can beat you with Dak and they got great receivers. I know Gallup's hurt, but that offensive line fully healthy can maul you, and you've got Zeke and Tony Pollard, so you can play both ways. If you play inclement weather, they got a good run game.
Yeah, and they're the number one defense by our numbers.
Wow. And that, yeah. I don't know, that seems a little weird given how bad Trevon Diggs, people love the stat that he's given up more yards than any cornerback in the league, you know?
Quarterbacks haven't.
That's a fair point. So you like that defense. I saw Micah Parsons is on the COVID list now, which is, I guess, you know, I don't want to dive into that too much, but it's almost better to get on it now, right?
This Philly game means almost nothing. Like, I looked at the playoff leverage of, like how much it changes the chances of making the Super Bowl for Dallas and Philadelphia based on they win or lose this game. And it's like 0.2%.
Is there any game this weekend like that raises
changing the seeding means almost nothing for these teams.
Nothing. Okay. Is there any game this weekend that would significantly change Super Bowl numbers?
I mean, the biggest that changes is if Tennessee drops out of the number one seed. But obviously also like who wins between the Chargers and the
Chargers, Raiders. Yep, that's a big Raiders. One. I guess Rams. You know,
49ers, Rams is the other big game of the weekend, right? Because if the 49ers win, they're in. If the Rams win, they win the division.
Yeah. If the Rams lose, I think they go on the road and Arizona gets the number one seed, assuming Arizona wins.
If the Rams lose and Arizona beats Seattle, then yes, the Rams go on the road.
Right.
And Arizona gets the four.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm getting excited, man. Aaron, I don't know about you, but, you know, calendar 2022, playoffs coming up and Super Bowl right around the corner.
This is going to be a really interesting playoffs because this is a year, like people have talked about it a lot, where there's no historically great team at all.
Yeah.
Right? Like we have no team in our numbers with a DVOA over 30%. Going back to 83, there's only 7 other years where no team was over 30%. It's rare for no team to be over 30%. So like the best teams this year are pretty good, but there's no like team where like Kansas City a couple years ago, or where, I mean, even Baltimore, even though they lost their first playoff game in 2019, they went into the playoffs like super ridiculously hot. Yeah. Like Tampa and New Orleans and Kansas City were all better last year than what, any team has been this year. Like there's just there's a lot of parity this year. There's a lot of feeling if anybody could come out of it.
I kind of like that. I don't mind it at all. I like dominant teams too, because they're also good for business. But parity's fun because you have no idea what's going to happen. All right, Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders. Definitely read his stuff. Are you still doing the column for the picks for ESPN?
I'm on the ESPN Shock Best Bets column every week. Yeah.
How has that gone for you this year?
I think I'm like 13 or 14 picks over 500.
Wow, that's very. Now are you doing teasers, parlays, straight up totals, or
straight
everything?
Up? It's a mix of picking lines, picking over unders, and a few player props.
Props, okay, all right, good stuff, Aaron Schatz. Continued success. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later, man.